The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
Standing Room Only presents Radio Showtime with producer, director, actress, and talent agent, Kathy Rollins. Listen here for the tops in entertainment talk. Get the lowdown on people in the biz, entertainment locally, film, music and TV in production, and advice for newcomers. How to get started. To take your part and be a star, call toll-free 1-888-565-1470. And now, let's take our mark, get ready, and action! Radio Showtime with Kathy Rollins.
Well, welcome. Here we are again. Welcome to Radio Showtime. I sound a little nasal here. I sound like, but just I'm getting over a cold. But I like it. It's kind of a nice Bublé sings like this, a Bublé flavor. Welcome to Radio Showtime. We have a wonderful show lined up for you, and I hope we get everything in that we want to do. We have Connor's Corners. We have Todd's Tips. We have some special announcements for you that we want you to be aware of. And my special guest is Alan Gerstel. He's here in the studio, and he's going to tell us all about his book and his journey, a marvelous book that he wrote, Swing, in Search of His Father, who happened to be Louis Prima. And welcome.
Thanks for inviting me, Kathy.
Happy to have you. Media people always want to be in the studio.
Yes.
Next week I have David Orson. He works for CBS. Mm-hmm. He says, can I come to the studio? I said, absolutely.
Come on down.
No calling in. So welcome, and we have an exciting show for you. I have some other announcements, but I see one of our contributors is Connor, Connor's Corner. Connor lives far away from here, but he always his part in the show is what kids his age are doing entertainment-wise, whether it's a film or a book, and he's into all this, and music. So welcome, Connor. How are you? Welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great.
So, listen, what do you have to share with us today?
Well, today I'm going to talk about a really cool computer game.
All right.
It's called SimCity. It's a game where you create, destroy, build a great, grand city. You manage power, you manage wealth, you basically own your own city, you make a mayor.
So
that's what you think.
And this is something you do by yourself, or is this something you do with someone else? Is this a one-on-one kind of thing? Is this a one-person project?
It's a really great one-on-one kind of game.
And yeah. what age who would be interested in something like this? I mean, your age, or from what to what? What age group would be interested in this?
Let me think. Probably from about maybe 9 to 90.
You're sure about that? 90. How many 90-year-olds have you spoken to?
That's the point.
Okay. All right. So what else can you tell us about that video game?
Well, there are 5 different versions.
All right.
SimCity 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
SimCity, like S-I-N. Is that what you're saying? SimCity? S-I-N City?
S-I-M City.
All right.
What you can do in SimCity is unbelievable. There's this way called God Mode where you terraform the whole world. This area that you build on, you can make giant mountains, low valleys, peaks. And what's cool about the next part is that you can put landmarks from all over the U.S. wherever you want.
Wow, so this is like playing God. This is like creating a whole universe or a whole country, right?
Exactly. You can put cool landmarks in mayor mode, which is a way that you build your city, find out, you even do taxes. Like, raise taxes, lower taxes, try and find an easy medium.
Really? Wow. You sound like someone like you'd be a good president. Maybe you should, it's like, how to make a whole community thrive and progress. Yes?
Yeah, really cool.
Sounds great.
We're right now in my school. Mm-hmm. We're doing something on SimCity 4, and I'm the guy that everybody comes to. I am the Sim 4 guy, and I help lots of people make the Hollywood sign. I guess that's a big popular attraction that everybody wants.
Okay, so is this something new? This is a new thing, or has it been out for a while?
SimCity itself has been out for a while, but that doesn't mean it's any less amazing. The graphics for a type of game like this are really great. You can terraform, change the whole terrain. The terrain levels, it creates beds, seat floors. Then there's the random spawning of animals, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Like, say you had a big sea right next to your area, there could be whales. They're breaching. There could be dolphins.
So is this a program that you say is in school already? Your school has this?
Yeah, I think it's in lots of schools. It's the future city.
Okay, well, great. So you recommend it, huh?
I definitely do. It is a great game. And you want to know what's cool? You can even create your own sim and sort of watch him grow and progress throughout the game.
Well, that sounds great. Okay, well, give me your famous sign-off, my dear, and it's always great hearing from you. And remember, you promised us in the weeks to come a great recipe for some kind of chocolate something or other. Remember?
Just so fun. And that will be next time.
Okay.
On Connor's Corner, Radio Showtime. See you next time.
Thank you very much, Connor. Thank you. See you next week. How about that? Sin City. I was worried there when he said Sin City, and I said, well, you know, I don't think his parents would like that. We have someone here, Dr. Seymour. There is a wonderful program that goes on in Miami. Miami Children's Hospital has a program, VACC Camp. They have a program that's been going on for quite some time. One of the coordinators is a woman by the name of Bella Florentine, and they have a program where they bring handicapped children from around the country, and they bring them into Miami, and they have a whole week of activities. Some of these children, they're handicapped for many different reasons. Either they were born with a certain defect. These are like young adults. These are not babies. These are like from like 11, 12, teenage to 20. Some of them are that way from birth. Some have developed a virus. They might be perfectly normal, and somehow some virus attacks the body, and they become affected, or they this can incur through an injury. And so VACC Camp is conducted as a project of the Miami Children's Hospital under the organization of this Bella Florentine and this Dr. Seymour, who we're going to chat in a minute. They have a major fundraiser going on September 20th, I understand. And Dr. Seymour, welcome to Radio Showtime. Hello?
Thank you very much for your time. My name is Simpser, and the VACC Camp means Ventilator Assisted Children Center. And I think the way you presented is correct. These children need a respirator to continue living, and this camp is completely free. This camp encompasses large amount of different diseases where children require a mechanical ventilator for their survival. And we have, it's our 27th year that happened this year in March. And we raise funds because it's completely free. People have to arrive to Miami, and we get children from all over the country and some international children who have a tracheostomy or they require a respirator for their survival. Mm. And the way we do it is with a golf tournament that, as you expressed before, is going to be on Friday, September the 20th, starting at noontime in Mel Rees Golf Country Club. This is a fantastic way to enjoy on Friday afternoon for the golfers, and finishes with a fantastic dinner. And we have multiple prizes, like we have people donating extra meals in very good restaurants. We have traveling tickets in some airlines, and we have foursome in some of the best clubs. in the area that they donate those to, so we can raise funds for this camp.
Dr. Simpson, where can people call to get more information and possibly participate in this?
They can call to 305-662-8222, that this is our back camp telephone number. Mm-hmm. And they can call one of our people who has tried to produce this first on his own, and now we have a few people who is assisting us to do this, Michael Mueller, 305-785-3241.
Or they can go to the VACC camp, VACC.net.
Yes, VACC camp, C-A-M-P, .com. And these people who want to look into how we do it, we have a documentary that was produced for free by a very talented movie person who was able to be produced in multiple festivals, in three festivals, mm-hmm. and got the third place in the festival in Toronto. So this is something, is a passion. We are running it with all volunteers. And our volunteers are young kids from our high school.
I've seen them. I've been down to in March. I've attended some of the camp that you have in March, and I see you have your...
Yes. And we really appreciate your assistance to try to popularize this golf tournament.
Super.
Because this is one of our big fundraisers. And this is how we produce the camp that is completely free to all the participants.
Okay. Well, anybody listening out there, give those numbers one more time. The first number, Dr. Simpson, go to VACCcamp.com. But the number again?
Is 305-662-8222 or 305-785-3241.
Very good. Oh, okay.
Thank you very much for your time, and I hope your listeners will participate.
Thank you so much for letting us know more about that. Thank you very much, and good luck.
No, thank you very much to you.
You're welcome, dear. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, yeah, I've attended the camp. It's amazing what they do. They take these kids all over, take them on boat rides. They entertain them, and their families are there, and it's just a wonderful celebration, and they just have a grand time.
That's super.
Entertainment and so. I see we have a mic online. I do want to let everyone know that our number, especially when I start speaking to our guest, we'd love for you to call in and participate if you have a question about anything that we're talking about or when I have Alan Gersell on in a few minutes. Our number here is 1-888-565-1470. 1-888-565-1470-1470, and we would love to hear from you. We have a Michael from Coral Gables on the line. Hello.
Very good afternoon to you, and I wanted to compliment WWNN for reaching down to Miami on KISS Radio FM, High Definition Radio. It really makes my day. You know,
are
I
you
live
listening,
around people.
Are you listening online, or are you listening from your radio? How are you listening?
Every which way. I found something called Lookout Premium that makes the phone put out a screaming sound from watching the online WWNN.
Wow.
It's the best thing. I've lost my phone in my living room three times, and it's screaming.
So tell us, Michael, what would you like to share?
Thanks for the entertainment show. The entertainment I want to ask is, do you think that America is occupied by media conservatives and Occupy movements so that we really get no real news?
Well, I don't know. I think it's all out there. You just have to find out which news line that you believe in and how to go after it. It seems sometimes there's more of one view than the other, but do you think that it's one-sided? I mean,
I'm just a 70-and-a-half-year-old AARP member, and I just get up and spend all day scanning the media. God gave me the opportunity.
Well, if you found Radio Showtime, you found me. I think you're going to find people who agree with you, you know?
Well, there's nothing like Health and Wealth Radio. When I was staying at the Holiday Inn Express,
mm-hmm.
there are room-to-room computers all get your show online.
Mm-hmm.
As to whether or not you can actually get it, I don't know.
Well, you can get it online, because I know for a fact we are being heard by a devout listener in Thailand right now, another one in Seattle, another one in Madrid, And so I, you know, that's online now. This other avenue you have, that's amazing. But we are working. In the weeks to come, we're going to be talking about,
We need to make it more user friendly.
Yeah. Well, we're just starting. My show is only like a month and a half old. But I have a lot of resources. And in time, I think we're going to, spread it out to other places.
Can I recommend a show?
Sure.
All right, every 11 a.m. and every 11 a.m. I spent about $1,000 last month at Barry's Vitamins and Herbs.
Oh, right, okay.
He has a patented delivery system on everything. It makes everybody else, out of sight.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, there you go. I have one other thing to announce. This is a friend of mine, Gunnell Goslin. She lives in West Palm, and we need people to know that there is a film. It's called The Anonymous People. It's a feature documentary about the over 23 million Americans living in long-term recovery from addiction to alcohol and other drugs. The film is being shown in numerous theaters around the country, and it can be seen locally. Well, the locally for here is going to be October 3rd at 7:30 at Movico. Parisian, at City Place. The film will only be shown if they get if they get 100 tickets sold. They're only half sold now. So I'm going to give you the website of, it's called Many Faces, One Voice. The one is number one. Manyfacesonevoice.org. And if you live around Palm Beach or, Boca and Northwind, would like to know more about this, check it out. And see the film, and it's something that it's about addiction, and something that as a community effort, more people should know about. So I did that for my friend Gunnell. We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back with my main guest, Alan Gersell, and we're going to hear about his book, Swing, and we'll be back after these messages. Thank you.
Three words define excellence in entertainment. Standing room only. Those same three words are your ticket to the finest and widest variety of entertainers for your next party or event. Founded and led by the amazing Kathy Rollins, Standing Room Only Productions is a licensed, bonded, and insured full-service entertainment company operating in South Florida since 1982. SRO's lineup of performers is unmatched and ranges from a DJ to an entire orchestra, from an MC to a full ensemble production, and includes specialties such as ventriloquists, magicians, belly dancers. If it's been on stage, SRO has it. They can even produce and direct your show using your group as the talent. Nothing tops a standing room only show. Call Kathy now at 954-791-7555. That's 954-791-7555. Or visit the website at KathySRO.com. That's Kathy with a C, KathySRO.com. Standing Room Only Productions.
Okay, welcome back. I want to mention before I introduce you to Alan Gersell that the Young at Heart Expo is going to take place on Thursday, October 31st at the South County Civic Center on Jog Road. The Young at Heart is a major, major expo. There's everything there. It's free. There's information on, there are seminars, information on health and welfare, food. There's free breakfast. There's free lunch. They have seminars, attorneys, chiropractors, travel agencies. It's just a nice place to go where you can get a lot of information for free. And that's going to be conducted by the Young at Heart Expo. They've been doing this for years. This is the Young at Heart organization is conducted by the Forum Publishing Company. And again, it's Wednesday, Thursday, Halloween Day, Thursday, October 31st from 9 in the morning until 3 p.m. And I will be there, and I'd love to see you there and come and meet me. And there'll be music and dancing and fun and food, and we'll look forward to that. That's Thursday, October 31st. I am very excited today because, I usually have two guests on, but I said this one is going to be one guest. We have a lot to talk about. I met a gentleman about a month ago. His name is Alan Gersell, and he's written a book titled Swing, In Search of His Father, who happened to be, turned out to be, Louis Prima. It was quite a labor of love, the book. It took him a long time to compile it, and it's not only his personal story, but what he endured and experienced is something that anyone who is adopted would be very, very interested to know. So welcome to Radio Showtime, Alan Gerstel.
Thank you, Kathy. Nice to be here.
So, my dear.
All right. Let's get down to it.
We have to start in so many different ways. You were adopted.
Yes.
And you really did not know until you were five. Your adoptive parents sat you down and said, Alan?
We picked you out of the hospital. You were born at St. Joseph's Hospital in Far Rockaway. That's Queens, New York. And we picked you out of all of the other babies there because we loved only you and we wanted only you. And after that, we never talked about it again.
And it was that obvious silence that began, even though you had other feelings of, well, who are my parents? But the fact that they did not speak about it, again, that there was no open dialogue.
Yeah, I felt there was something wrong with being adopted, something wrong that's happened to me.
Right. So as looking back and thinking back, so how did you start that feeling, that thing that kept on gnawing at you that began your ultimate search?
Well, I found that my parents, and I'll make it clear, I have parents and I have birth parents. The parents are the parents who raised me. My birth parents are the result of biology, and that's what brought me here. I felt that there was something more. I felt that I didn't quite fit in with this family, that there was creativity I had musical ability. They encouraged me, as a matter of fact, to play the piano and then saxophone and clarinet. Interestingly enough, though, when they asked me what instrument I wanted to play, I said trumpet.
And how old were you when this happened?
Probably 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And they said, oh, no, not the trumpet. They said, you'll get a deformed lip like Louis Armstrong has. You don't want to do that.
They did not know who your first parents were.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
But I suspect they knew. Uh-huh. I suspect that somewhere along the line the word got to them.
Okay.
Because when the trumpet thing is a very
significant
thing. That why wouldn't they want me to play the trumpet?
Right.
I think it was just too close to home.
Mm-hmm.
And I played, when I was in high school, I played in a Dixieland band. Now, Dixieland was not particularly popular, but it was the Dixie Cups, and I played in the Dixieland band, and I played what turned out to be my birth father's music, When the Saints Go Marching In, Basin Street
right.
Blues.
And explain to our listeners that your parents were not really musical.
No, they were not musical
people.
At all. No, no.
Your dad was a jeweler?
A jeweler. They were very conservative from Czechoslovakia, from Hungary. They were lovely, wonderful people, but no one would ever accuse them of being creative. That was not in their vocabulary. So this was something that I just didn't fit in. And I tell the story in the book too that I during my teenage years I would have dreams, and these dreams would take me into a kind of a Disney-esque kind of community, and I'd walk down a street where these lovely houses were and these trees and whatever, and I was looking for a particular address, and I would find the address, and I'd go up to the door, I'd knock on the door, and this woman would open the door, presumably my birth mother, and I would say to her, you gave me away. You gave up on me, and I'm here to show you and to prove to you that I'm a good person, and you shouldn't have done that to me. That was a bad thing to do to me, and then I'd wake up.
Wow, it's so vivid a dream to have had all these
over
years.
Over and over and over again.
Mm.
So obviously something was working inside me, something that wanted to find out.
Did you share? You never shared those thoughts about the dream with your parents?
Oh, no. I could never do that. It was unspoken.
It was
we didn't talk about it, period.
So you grow up, go through high school, you're in theatrical things, you have this draw, right?
I'm this entertainer, yes,
yeah.
and yet I knew something. There was some connection somewhere.
And it's a Jewish household.
Jewish household, right. Right. And again, too, I often question, now, today we wouldn't think about this, but think about it so many years ago. What's a nice Jewish boy doing getting born at St. Joseph's Hospital? It just didn't fit with me. Now, today, I mean, my kids were born at St. Joseph's Hospital in Paterson, New Jersey, and I wouldn't think twice about it.
But then, with that situation.
I did. And so all of these questions were there. I didn't start really searching until I got married and in 1976. And I learned from, I joined the Adoptees Liberty Movement Association to help me with the search. Mm-hmm. And I learned from them that many men begin a search when they get married, many adopted men. Because there's this psychological thing of carrying the family forward and raising another generation. And where did I really come from?
And you had
and
nothing
back there. So that's where I started. And the people at ALMA really helped through the years, giving me advice, giving me ideas. The book, as you know, since you've read it, is really a detective story. Mm.
And also, when you wrote this book, you did not have the access to the internet.
No internet.
Everything was by foot, car, calling up.
You'd think it was something like a Humphrey Bogart film or something, you know, because very old-fashioned phones. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have any of this. And everything was done. When I wrote letters, I wrote letters. I typed out letters.
So when you start working with ALMA, was that when you were getting married?
Right, after I got married, and I started meeting. They have little informal group meetings, and they don't actually do a search for you, but most of them have completed searches, so they can help you, give you information, tips, what you should look for. I mean, they said look for a birth certificate, look for voting records, looking for these things. Right. In my particular case, my birth mother, to make things even worse for me, never voted, never drove, didn't have a driver's license, didn't even have a social security number until much later in her life, because she worked on 52nd Street and she worked in the clubs that were run by the boys. And
also we have to say that you could not get any of this information from your parents, because you didn't want, they were so clear at the age of 5 to let you know you're adopted. No open dialogue.
Right.
You felt, well, I can't even go to them. Normally you would have gone to them, but you knew you couldn't.
Right.
So you had to do this on your own without, because you felt you might hurt them.
Right.
Because they gave that kind of feeling to you.
Right.
So that avenue was off. So you resorted to the different groups, networking groups that.
Right. I was born at St. Joseph's Hospital. Let me call St. Joseph's Hospital.
Right.
I called St. Joseph's. I got an operator, and she said, I don't think this is St. Joseph's, but wait a second. It's now Long Island Jewish Hospital, but it was St. Joseph's Hospital.
And luckily that she knew.
She knew that.
If she was a new employee, she would have known.
So I called Long Island Jewish, and they told me that the records were all transferred to St. Anthony's Hospital. And then I approached St. Anthony's, and I kept running across a brick wall. St. Anthony's kept writing back, there's no record of a birth on that date, whatever. And it finally, I mean, the book, I admit that I bribed, I did whatever it took to get the information.
And you tell the story so beautifully, because your search was 24 years. It took you 24 years really to get solid, definitive answers.
Right.
And it took, in doing that, and then you wanted to present it so it was entertaining and interesting.
Right.
So there's a style of writing that he chose that tells you certain parts, but then the next chapter kind of balances it out. I don't want to give it away. It's a wonderful read. You just can't put it down.
Thank you.
Yeah, so now your wife was very extremely helpful. You met the love of your life.
Absolutely.
And very supportive. She wanted you to do
this. She was by my side every step of the way.
But you started this before you met her?
No, just about the time.
Just about the time.
And she got on board with it right away. And we had some tough times. We really did. And a lot of dead ends, just a lot of frustration. And she would even tell you, you know, I was a little bit obsessed at times.
But you never thought of giving up, but you wouldn't
no.
let yourself.
No,
give,
I wouldn't.
I mean,
no.
You said, no, I'm going to do it.
And stick to it.
But then you had a family.
Right.
And so here you have the search, your marriage, your family, and your career.
And
all this time, no internet.
Right.
No shortcuts.
Right.
Dead ends, good ends.
I'll give you an example. There was
it is a mystery.
When I did finally find out my birth mother's name, Dorothy MacDonald, Alma suggested I write to all the MacDonalds. And so I wrote to every MacDonald in the Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Queens phone book. That was about 1,500 letters. I mean, I wrote a form letter, Xeroxed it off. Remember
amazing.
Xeroxing? Yeah, Xeroxed it off. And mailed them out to see if I could stir up anything. It was absolutely nothing.
By the way, we're speaking to Alan Gerstel. If you'd like to ask him a question, please feel free to call 1-888-565-1470. 1-888-565-1470. All right. So did you, like, have a room in your house where you kept all this out or on the walls? Because it's a lot of information, because you went to different places. And
right.
How did you keep it together? How did you keep it sorted and run your life?
I am, my wife will tell you, a very organized person. And so I had files of this and that, and I would post things, and I would keep moving things around and shuffle things. And even in the book, there were so many dead ends, I couldn't put them in the book because a reader would get confused.
Right.
So I even had to pare that down a little bit. But, it was difficult because there were so many things going on at the same time. But, I was able to take it step by step by step. Once I found my birth mother's name. And where she lived, I found a wonderful private detective, Lou Luschalbo.
And even though she had no social security, she had
right.
no
but
nothing
we found,
tangible.
And Lou had this ability to go talk to people. Talk, and you get information from them.
Tell us about Lou. He was highly recommended. He was not the first.
No,
detective.
He was not the first. I had several private detectives first, and then someone from Alma recommended Lou, and he's still one of my best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And but what a guy! This guy could just talk to you, and you would open up, and you would tell him, you'd, as they say, spill your guts. You would tell him anything.
He had the gift.
Had the gift. When we went to a story I tell, when we went to California to try to track down this lady who I knew was my birth mother's next door neighbor in New York,
which took you a long time
to
find
out.
That.
Right, to get to that point, we were out there, and we knew that we found an address, an apartment building. And I went in and I started talking to the superintendent. We went through the old records. Lou disappeared. He came back about 20 minutes later and said, I think I found her. I said, how'd you do that?
That was like a year, in 24 years, that was like year 15, 16, 17.
Right.
Wow.
Running down the track there a bit. And I said, how'd you do that? He said, I went out back and I saw a gentleman out there and he was pruning his tree, and I talked to him a little bit, and he said, oh, you ought to talk to this lady up in this, she knows her. And I went up there, and it turns out that this lady's husband was an optometrist, and she used
his services.
So we got the optometrist's phone number, we called the optometrist's office, we got a hold of his wife, and his wife said, I knew one day I'd get this phone call.
Wow.
And they met with us at the Sheraton Universal at the lounge.
The day you were leaving.
The day we were leaving.
Your time
right.
was running out.
Yeah.
You're coming back.
And that's Fran Yasny, who I'm still in touch with, and wonderful, wonderful person who's got a great story herself, but that's for another time. And another book, yeah. But we met with her, and she was the first person who told me. I said, do you know who my birth father is? And she said, yes. And I said, will you tell me? And she said, yes, it was Louis Prima.
How did you feel? Because that was the first
time
you had heard that.
I was just on cloud nine. And I said, and then Lou chimed in. Lou was with me. He said, well, how are you so certain? How would you know this? I mean, to be a fact. And she said, to me, your birth mother and I were the best of friends. As a matter of fact, when I caught my husband cheating, I called her in to be my witness, and she was my witness in the divorce. We were that close, and she was the one who told me, and I have no doubt whatsoever. Now, I will say to people who read the book, I have no absolute record, proof. I have nothing on a piece of paper that says Louis Prim is my father. I have stories told by 7 or 8 individual people who all point to Louis Prima
and
from different directions.
And there were four very strong without
ones,
a doubt.
Without a doubt, yes.
And not connected to each other. Yeah, they were separate, so it's not like it's, you know, made up in any way.
Right.
Wow. So that, and that was almost coming to the end. So you find, when you found out that, you also found out that Louis Prima had already passed away.
Yes.
And your birth mother as well.
Yes.
By not too many years.
Yes. Well, interestingly, in the book, you see so many, and you read it, so you've seen all the coincidences in the book.
Many.
The fact that I worked with Keeley Smith in Summerstock after she divorced Louis Prima.
What, this is before your search.
Before my search. I had no idea. Right. None whatsoever. Yeah. There are so many of these things that took place. And
Martha Ray.
Martha Ray. The Martha Ray story.
She was very close with him years back in the 30s, right?
I had no idea. I knew Maggie. That was her nickname through the years.
We
worked together. And she actually called me when I was in Vietnam. She tracked me down. And she wanted me to be on her USO tour, but she couldn't get me on the tour. And we were very, very close. And then I found out later, after she passed away, that she and my birth father had an affair back in the 30s.
How about that?
My birth father was wonderful. Now, you know, for your young listeners out there who don't know who Louis Prima is, I always mention The Jungle Book. And they always light up. I say King Louis in The Jungle Book. Mm. But, you know, he wrote Jump, Jive, and Whale. He wrote Sing, Sing, Sing.
So he wrote those songs.
He wrote those songs, yes. Benny Goodman made a hit out of Sing, 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 but Louis Prima wrote it. He wrote Sunday Kind of Love. Yes, he wrote that. And, of course, he did Just a Gigolo.
So when was he born? What was his birth year?
It was around 1910. I mean, he was born in New Orleans.
Yes, I remember
and
that.
And I think
book.
It was 1910.
Yeah,
and another coincidence, both my fathers, my birth father and my father, died the same year at the same age, 4 months apart.
And many people don't know how. I was shocked to find out how he passed away, because we always know Louis Prima,
Right. And then poof.
When did he die? How did he die? But he had a brain tumor.
A brain tumor, meningioma, which is hereditary, so I'm glad I know. I have no symptoms, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But it's a brain tumor that caused him great pain, headaches.
So he was like in the 60s when this kind of was discovered.
Right. And he begged the doctors to operate because he couldn't continue like that. And they didn't want to because they didn't really have the technology for it.
And he opted for surgery.
Surgery went
bad. Prognosis was not good.
Surgery went bad. He never came out of the coma. So he was in a coma for 3 years.
Is that amazing?
Died.
See, people I'm sure don't know that. Now, that was one of the reasons you wanted to, not only for that emotional connection to who am I, who left me, but you had children.
Yes.
You had twin boys.
Right.
And you wanted to know.
If there's something I could pass down or whatever.
Right. So that was another reason.
Right. To know that.
And so when you find out who your mother is and who your father is, they are passed.
They're gone.
They're gone.
Right.
And then, but you still you were living in New Jersey.
New Jersey
you were
at the time.
Not in Westwood, but in Hillsdale.
In Hillsdale.
Yeah. And so you didn't want your parents who raised you to know that the search was going on because you were afraid, because they were so quiet about it, that it would hurt them.
When I went into this search, I didn't want to hurt anybody. I wanted to be careful that I wouldn't step on any toes, that no one would get hurt. So I did not release the book until after both my parents had passed away. And neither of them knew that I was going through the search.
So not only the 24 years of the soup to nuts, the compiling, getting the answers, then you kind of put it on hold because you said I got to get on with my life.
Right.
Got a family.
At that point, my television news career was taking off,
right.
And I was starting to work for News 12 Long Island.
Education-wise, let our listeners know where you went to school and what you pursued a career in drama and theater.
Right.
So then you kept this information all compiled neatly, very organized, and then you decide, when did you decide, I got to do a book? I got to document this. How did that come about?
It wasn't until about 15 years had passed from the time I kind of put it to bed.
Right.
Back around 1985, and I said, look, I've gotten as close as I can. I know as much as I can. And I had tried writing to Louis Prima's fifth wife, Gia Mayone. I tried to contact her. Little did I know that the estate had not been settled and no one wanted to know from any outsiders. So I again hit another brick wall, but I was about 90% sure I had the answers, and that was that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was around 2000 or so. First of all, we were talking about the movie The Big Night.
Yes.
That came out, and it mentioned Louis Prima.
If you don't know, folks, The Big Night was a film that was, the premise was about a restaurant,
right.
and Louis Prima was supposed to come in
and entertain.
And
he didn't. Well, people
that's
in the family said if it really had happened, he would have showed up, because that's the way he was. But there was another movie called Louis Prima, The Wildest. It was a documentary, and friends of mine in New York sent me a New York Times review of it. It only played in New York and Los Angeles. And then about 6 months later, I got a catalog, and sure enough, Louis Prima, The Wildest was in the catalog. I could buy the VHS tape for $15, and I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat at home, my wife and my kids, and we put it on, and first we see Gia Prima, she's talking, then we see Lena Prima, she's talking, and then Louis Prima Jr. And my kids and my wife go, oh my God, he looks just like you. So that started it all over again. That kind of revved it up all over again. Mm-hmm. And I contacted, my private detective, contacted Louis Prima Jr., who then contacted the lawyer, Tony Sylvester, and I spoke with Tony, who was Gia's lawyer, and he said to me, his first question was, what do you want, Alan? And I said, I don't want anything. I don't want any money. I don't feel I deserve any money. That's not what this is about. And he said to me, that's a very good start. So we talked, and then I told him I was working for WPEC here in West Palm Beach, and you could go to my website and see my picture and my bio.
I have to apologize. I've been saying XEL all this time.
Well, now I'm doing XEL.
Oh, okay, I'm right.
Now
right.
I'm working for XEL, but it was WPEC, and he called me back 2 days later and said, yeah, we checked out the website and the picture. Gia wants to talk to you.
Just on the picture.
Because,
yeah, you do. Yeah.
And I called Gia. We talked for about an hour. She said, I saw your picture. I knew. She said, I knew. There's no question in my mind.
Isn't that?
And then the next day, the doorbell rings, and I get a basket of flowers from Gia. And it says, welcome to the family.
Oh, how nice.
Wasn't that sweet?
That is very nice. So you find out how many sisters and half-sisters and brothers you have?
I've met my older sister, Joyce. I've met my younger sister, Tracy. Actually, she lives in Seattle now. We visited with her a couple of weeks ago. And her daughter, Lara, and son-in-law, Jared. That's where my son is. Ian is now.
Oh, my God.
And they have been so good to Ian.
Mm.
So, I mean, here's this extended family. And look at what's happened.
But we have to explain just a teeny bit. How did your mother and Louis Prima get together? Just because the book is a great read. Trust me, you won't be able to put it down. But how did that happen?
52nd Street back in the 40s was called Swing Street. It was a street of nightclubs and speakeasies and a place where people went to have a good time. And she was a hostess at some of the clubs. Sometimes she'd be a cigarette girl.
Exceptionally beautiful.
Yes. And she wanted to be a singer in the band. And she got tight with a bunch of the guys in Louis Prima's band and actually got tight with the band leader, I suppose. You could put it that way.
She was from Philadelphia.
She was from Philadelphia.
She's not a New Yorker.
But we did not know that then.
But,
you know.
And she left there and her family, which was not really a great environment.
Right.
So she got out of that, but she went to New York to pursue her dream.
Right. And, you know, just think about that kind of environment, the CD clubs and whatever. It's kind
what
of
year,
like a
we're
film
talking
noir.
42, what year
40,
we talk-
43,
right.
Somewhere in there. And my birth father had a one-night stand. And what amazes me to this day is she chose to go to Far Rockaway. I was born on August 11th. So back then there was no air conditioning. So her next-door neighbor, Fran Yasny, his mother was in Far Rockaway in a bungalow. She said, why don't you spend the summer with my mother and give birth down there? Get away from the scene. Get away from everybody who knows you. It's a perfect getaway.
Right.
And so she went down there, and she gave birth down there. But it's then Louis could not go to visit her in the hospital.
Because
He knew. And he was a big star. But
and he
Luella,
was married.
He was married, yes. And Luella
to
Parsons.
To number two. Number second wife, right?
Right. And Luella Parsons, all the Gossip columnists would have a field day with
right.
it. So he asked his best friend, Jimmy Vincent, who was the drummer in the band, he gave him some money and said, buy her a cross on a chain, go down there, and I want you to propose to her. I want you to marry her.
Wow. He was like a god among
but
his.
Can you imagine? Yeah, I can't imagine having a best friend. I'd say, would you marry?
Well, he was the big beast.
He was the big guy. Well, Jimmy went to the hospital and proposed to her, and she turned him down. She said, I don't want to be a mother. I want to be a singer in the band. And Gia actually confirmed that with Jimmy Vincent before he died. Yeah.
Ah.
So she said, there's no question.
Yeah.
If Jimmy says that.
Even when you came in, it was not only the picture.
Right.
Gia knew.
She knew.
Yeah.
She knew.
Wow.
So, I mean, just so many fascinating aspects. The other aspect of the Ferruccis. This is an Italian couple who also vacationed.
Wanted to adopt you.
Not even adopt me. They wanted
the gray market, right?
The gray market. They wanted
Explain
to be
what
able
the gray market is.
Well, what they wanted, that was a little different. What they wanted to do was they actually had my birth mother check into the hospital under Rose Ferrucci's name. So they wouldn't have to adopt me. I would already be theirs when they took me back to their apartment in Brooklyn. But the gray market, that was when my parents adopted me. It wasn't done through an agency. It wasn't done above board. But there was a thing called a gray market adoption system in New York State at that time where you could adopt through lawyers, but no money could exchange hands.
Right,
and then it was finalized by the courts, but it wasn't done as strictly as it would be done through an agency.
Right, and they just paid for the expenses of her hospital.
So to speak. But in this case, we know that money did exchange hands.
Yeah.
But who would report it?
But when you reflect back and you get to that point in the book, you says, you know, you were given the best path to be raised by the Gerstels.
Absolutely. No question.
Because if she had married Jimmy or she had kept you, the life you would have had would not have been anything near this. And so let's talk about, now, if you want to, the book is available on Amazon.com if they want to. Amazon.com.
I tell people to look for Swing, The Search for My Father, Louis Prima.
Because, swing?
Well, there are hundreds of golf books.
Exactly.
And they're all golf swing books. So you have to look for Swing, The Search for My Father, Louis Prima. It's on Amazon. You can also get it in Kindle.
Yes. And it's Alan Gerstel, Gerstel.
Right.
So a must read. It's a wonderful book. Let's talk about you now.
Okay.
You wrote the book. You produced an amazing, I mean, your heart and soul and your whole search is here and you're being organized and finally doing it and not hurting those that you felt might get hurt. But you got the answers.
Yes.
Then you put it aside, wait a few years, then you bring everything out, you do the book. Let's talk about you, what you're doing now and the influence again, the Louis Prima, the music, the entertainer. Tell us about what you're doing now, and you're in a production coming up.
Right. I began my career as an actor and then went into television news when my wife was pregnant with twins and I realized I needed to have health insurance and a paycheck every 2 weeks. So that's what I did for the better part of 25 years. But now I'm back into acting again. I left WPEC about 5 years ago, worked for WXEL, and I still work for them. I still do pledge drives for them, and we're developing a program right now that we hope is going to be successful in the future. But then the Wick Theater in Boca Raton, for those of you who don't know, the Caldwell Theater, the former Caldwell Theater, is now the Wick Theater. It's we're opening with Sound of Music.
That Caldwell was an Equity
House. Yes, and this is also. Sound of Music has 28 people in the cast, and these people, this cast is unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Wow. We're rehearsing right now. We open September 19th, and it runs through October 20th. I'm just impressed. So many actors are in from New York for this. The wow. Kids are wonderful. The scenery is spectacular. I don't think the audiences are ready for this here in a way. I don't think they've got the expectations.
When did Caldwell convert to the Wick?
It closed down last year, and then it was dark for a while. And Marilyn Wick, who owns owns Costume World, the biggest costume
in Pompano.
Yes, indeed. She bought it. She's moving the costume museum there. So people who want to see costumes can come to the Costume Museum, and they can come and see the show.
So who do you play?
I'm playing three small roles. I'm just kind of inching my way back into it. But the largest one is Admiral von Schreiber, the one who comes at the end and actually kind of forces Captain von Trapp to take the kids and get out of town before mm-hmm. he's conscripted into the Navy. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the three roles I'm playing. And then after that, they're doing White Christmas, and I'm playing the general in White Christmas. So I'll be a busy actor for the next couple of months.
Yeah. So now, I asked you this when I first met you, do you sing? But then I saw something in the book that you do sing, or you're getting into singing.
I always wanted to sing. See, I mean, maybe that's a tie back with my birth mother.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to sing, and I can carry a tune and whatever else.
Have you ever taken
lessons? Oh, I've taken lessons
for
years and years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
And my wife will say, you're okay. It's okay, you know, but I don't try to portray myself as a singer.
Are you a dancer?
I can move pretty well, yeah. I think, yeah.
And the musical instruments, what do you play?
I used to play piano, sax, and clarinet.
Oh, did you ever get to the trumpet?
No, never got to the trumpet.
Amazing. And you haven't really, you've put your acting career on the, even though you're doing the TV thing.
Right.
But the acting thing, what did you do before? Like, there's been a little hiatus? I mean, you haven't been
working at WPEC, I worked for the Palm Beach Shakespeare Festival. I'd perform every summer. So we did, Macbeth, we did Twelfth Night two summers ago. So I get out there for a couple of weeks here and there, not that often, mm-hmm. you know, but I, you know, when it's in your blood.
Exactly. You don't choose it. No, it chooses you.
That's
and you say, here I am. Take me. Do it. But the adoption angle, you told me you often, you work with Alma.
Yes.
And you help other people.
Yes.
What have you done along those lines?
Well, one gentleman contacted me from California, and he was looking for his birth father. Very similar. His birth father was a trumpet player, a musician.
Wow.
The information I gave him, he found him in 2 weeks. He found his birth father in 2 weeks, approached his birth father. His birth father accepted him. Everything was wonderful. And then this gentleman happened to die a week later.
His child.
But at least he found.
He did that.
He found his birth. And I've just been contacted by a mother in Central Florida who's looking for the child that she gave up.
Oh, wow.
And we haven't really started on that yet. I can't actually do the search, but what I can do is again,
advise.
give some pointers, some tips.
You've been through so much.
Right.
And again, without a computer, and now, so you could advise me. So do you give talks on this sometimes, or you just work with Alma and support other people when they
I do that, but if anyone's interested, I mean, they can contact Alma and contact me.
How do they contact you? What's the best way to get email or?
Through this, they'd have to go to Alma first because I have to work through.
Where is Alma? Around the country?
Alma's around the country. It's nationwide.
All
if
right.
you just put it, Google ALMA, Adoptees Liberty Movement Association, you can get a phone number. And I think it's probably something like $20 a year to join.
How long has Alma been around?
Since 1971. It was founded by Florence Fisher, who was an adoptee herself, who went through a search, who wrote a book, and decided to, she wanted to help other people.
And where are they based out of?
There's a New York office, but they're really all over the country.
So alma.com or?
Just Adoptees Liberty Movement Association, and then they'll be able to find
the Alma
that's nearest to them.
And they can find out, you know, either find out where the meetings are.
Right, right. And then hook up with people, and that's really the best way. Mm-hmm. The best way is if you can sit down with some people. Now, in Florida, there are only a couple of us that are doing it. In New Jersey, there are more, so they have actually meetings at people's homes and whatever else, rather than a one-on-one.
You wrote your book quite creatively, the fashion, the way you did it. You have to see this book because it's not like cover-to-cover straight story, this happened, then that happened. It's kind of... In chapters, very interesting chapters. Are you going to write again? I mean, it doesn't have to be about this, certainly, but have you ever thought of, you know, I might...
There's another novel in there.
I think
something to do perhaps with television news that might be...
Like a spoofy kind of thing or something, something with like a murder?
It won't be legit. It will take television news on or something like that. Yeah, it'll be something like that.
Oh, great.
But that'll be a while before I get to that.
Are your children theatrical?
They're left-brained and right-brained. One son is...
Oh, they're twins.
They're twins, twin boys. One of them is a techie, and the other one wants to be an actor, just like his father.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't listen to his father, just like I wouldn't listen to mine.
I hope you didn't give him a hard time.
So, but, you know, it's rubbed off at least on one of them.
Well, listen, I want to thank you very much. We have 2 minutes, excuse me, 2 minutes left. His name is Alan Gerstel. Alan, give us your phone number, your email, how anybody could contact you again, please.
You can contact me at anchoralan, one word, anchoralan, at gmail.com.
Very good. And folks, I want you to listen next week we're going to have David Orson. He's a wonderful baritone, works for CBS, got himself an Emmy. And also my other guest next week is going to be Mr. Doug LaRue. He is an amazing fellow that knows everything about Key West, Florida, Homestead. He's into radio, and he's working with, there's going to be a film and arts festival coming up. He's going to tell us about that this next week. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. This is Kathy Rollins. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And I want you to know, I picked this song before I met you.
Okay.
That's another do-do-do-do. Have a wonderful week. Tomorrow's a big day, you know. They're electing a mayor in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow's the anniversary of 9/11. Mr. Obama is speaking at 9 o'clock tonight. And there's a lot going on. So stay safe, be well, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Good night. With that old moon above, the Mediterranean Sea. In the morning, San Janino, we'll go walking. Where the mountains of the sun come into sight. And by the little jewelry shop, we'll stop and linger. While I buy a wedding ring for your finger. And in the meantime, let me tell you. Buonasera, senorina, kiss me goodnight. Buonasera, senorina, kiss me goodnight. But the red do that to the bat, bona body boat, but do the battle boat, buonasera.
You've been listening to Radio Showtime with producer, director, actress, and talent agent Kathy Rollins. To find out more about Kathy and Standing Room Only Productions, go to Kathy SRO.